This conference is being recorded.
Welcome, everybody, officially. Welcome to Interview with the Masters. This is Liana Silver with Redefining Monogamy, and I am beyond thrilled to begin the series this evening with Deborah Annapole. And Deborah Annapole is, I like to say, founding mother of really conscious, consensual love styles, which is now known as polyamory. I'm going to say a few words and then have Deborah add some about herself. This call tonight is about the challenges and the rewards of a polyamorous love style and lifestyle, and partly as an alternative to some of the options, which are lying and cheating and infidelity. So we're going to get into what polyamory is and get right into your questions. Deborah is, as I said, a founding mother of polyamory, and her books have just broken ground in this really heart-centered arena. I love her approach, which is really about a larger picture of seeing the divine in everyone, that it is about a larger question of love and respecting the unity of sex and love. Deborah is a master on many levels. She has a couple of books, which she'll speak about later. Love, The New Love Without Limits is her website. We'll talk about that in a minute. So she's the author of Polyamory, The New Love Without Limits, The Seven Natural Laws of Love, and then she's got a book coming out in 2010, which I'll have her speak about more. She's also one of the co-founders of Loving More magazine, which is just one of the mastheads of the movement of polyamory. I am really thrilled that she's given us an hour of her time, especially since she's taking it out of her home in Hawaii. So we'll get right started. Deborah, go ahead and add a few more words if about yourself that you want them to know that I might not have covered.
Okay. Well, one of the most fun things I've done over the last 20-some years is to lead anywhere from evening to two-week-long retreats focusing on conscious relating, tantra, sexual healing. And I've done this all over the United States and all over the world. And through that process, I've met just thousands and thousands of people who are exploring these lifestyles. And I've pulled back a bit from doing the groups, but I do still work with people one-on-one, mostly on the phone. And I'm really entering a new phase of my life. I'm very excited. I don't really know what it looks like and where it's going to take me, and invite you to join me in co-creating it.
Fabulous. Wonderful. Well, let's jump right in. I think we got more questions than my printer had paper for, so I'm going to get started with some of those. And before we ask some of the guests' questions, Deborah, in your words, will you just go ahead and lay just a tiny bit of ground for those people on the call who might not know what polyamory is or kind of where the perspective is that you're coming from? Will you just take that away for a moment?
Sure. I'm really glad you asked that because, you know, we made up this word. Oberon and Morning Glory Zell and I and a few other people were brainstorming for years of what can we call this that doesn't use the word monogamy. We didn't. It's like the anti-war movement was replaced by the peace movement. So the non-monogamy concept, we wanted something that was just about itself, not in reference to monogamy. And so Oberon and Morning Glory came up with the word polyamory, and it seemed like a really cool word at the time, and in fact, it caught on big time, especially on the internet. But what's happened over the years is it's come to mean so many different things to so many different people that it's virtually meaningless. And particularly once the mass media gets a hold of it, which it's great that it has, that means, you know, all these people who might have never considered the possibility of anything other than an exclusive relationship now have other ideas to draw from. But what I always meant by polyamory and which has been forgotten along the way, is that it's not about the form of the relationship. It's not about how many partners you might have or not have at any given moment. It's more about being open to letting love flow and having a more fluid way of relating, which might include just one other person, or it might include two or three or six or none. So it's not about the form. Polyamory for me, I mean, literally it's many loves, not many sex partners. So it's about just allowing love rather than your mind or your ego to decide what your relationships look like.
Beautiful, Deborah. And I might even add, you know, our culture. So that really tapping into what it is, how love will express itself in your relating and your loving.
Yes, yes, because most of our ideas about love, they're not things that we consciously learn, but they're things that we absorbed pretty much unconsciously through the culture. And what's unconscious is not questioned. It's assumed that that's the truth. And yet when we look a little deeper, and that's really where I went with the seven natural laws of love, of what is this thing called love? What is it really? Not what we observed through the culture or was told by mom or dad or the church, but what is it really? And I didn't quite have the chutzpah when I first wrote Love Without Limits in 1992 to say, I'm going to redefine love now. It took me another 20-some years to get that bold. But in fact, that's really, to me, what polyamory is about. It's a redefining love, or you call it, I think, redefining monogamy.
Right. Same realm. And before we actually, I'd love to hear more about the new book, whatever you can reveal. Although, let me just say, Deborah and I had a chat before we decided to do this interview, and she said just a beautiful thing, which I'd love to paraphrase here, which is, you know, one way to look at polyamory is sort of talking about or actually doing in action the things that we do, but just not lying about it. And somehow that's more shocking to people, that there may be a conscious choice to actually love and connect and be intimate with more than one partner, where everybody knows and everybody's above board, and that could be more shocking to people than affairs and cheating and the betrayals that go along with that. So thank you for saying that when we were chatting, and I wanted to add that as one of the pieces that you come from in all that
you
write about. And
yes. Yes, that's, you know, truth and honesty in relationship as well as in the other arenas of life. This is what's up as we enter the 21st century. People are realizing if you don't have truth, you don't have intimacy.
Well said. Well said. Well, tell us a little bit about your new book, about the seven natural laws of love, or maybe just about the laws, maybe not about the book if it's top secret still, but let us know.
Okay, well, yeah, the Seven Natural Laws of Love actually is not the new book that's coming out in June, but is the latest book, but it's actually been out for several years. And I went to Hawaii and started farming right when that book was published, and I somehow found it much more interesting to swim with whales and dolphins and grow exotic fruit and coffee than I did to promote the book. So a lot of people think that's the new book, but actually it's new to you because you don't know about it, but it's been out for a while and it's not at all secret. I'd love for people to know more about it. And the brand new book that's not even out until June, that's at the publishers right now, is Polyamory in the 21st Century. And I'm excited about this book because it really gave me a chance to say all the things that I've been thinking and feeling about polyamory as I've watched it evolve over the last 20-some years. And one of the things that is most exciting for me is that I've seen it go worldwide. It's not just something in the United States anymore. It's all over the world. And it's also a second generation is coming up. I mean, not that, you know, I'm a baby boomer, and we tend to think of ourselves as the first generation, which actually isn't true. And I do have a chapter about history which traces it back actually to at least the 1800s. But in, you know, with the sexual revolution, things really opened up. And those of us who lived through the sexual revolution have now raised children, and they're out there doing their marriages. And so there's a second generation now of young people who were actually raised in polyamorous families. And I find that just really heartwarming and exciting to see what kind of kids were produced in these families.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah, sorry, I got so excited about your books. I got them all mixed up, so thanks for setting me straight. let me go ahead and start with a pre-submitted question, and then we'll see who wants to jump in live. This, I think, is a nice ground-laying question as well. So, and if you hear your question, you can feel free to chime in a minute and get some clarification. But so this question is, how would you express to your new monogamous partner that you sometimes think about polyamory? Meaning that while sometimes it seems entirely possible to keep a monogamous relationship, I have my doubts, and I want to be honest with my partner. I want to not oversell myself as this perfect person which does not think about more than one partner, while at the same time not indicate that I will definitely need to be polyamorous. So any guidance on that one, Deborah?
Well, there's a couple ways to go about this. If it's very early in the relationship, just bringing it up as a topic of conversation while it feels risky is totally appropriate. You know, something along the lines of, how do you feel about monogamy? Or how do you feel about not monogamy? You know, what's your take on this? And I'm just bringing it up for exploration and telling the truth. If the truth is that you're not sure what you want or how things might unfold for you, that's, I think, a really juicy, intimate conversation to have with a prospective partner. Now, if you're already pretty deep into the relationship and, you know, living together or engaged or in some way more invested, then a little bit easier way to introduce the topic, I find, is to either rent one of these fabulous movies that have come out in the last while that have actual polyamorous themes. Like French Twist comes to mind as one that's, it's very humorous and at the same time meaty. It addresses some of the real issues. But there's a lot of them out there. And this is another way to bring up the subject that it's maybe a little less personal, but still gets the job done.
Really nice, and I'll throw one in there that, you know, it'll get the conversation started, which is a Woody Allen movie called Vicky Cristina Barcelona. I don't know that it treats the subject with as much depth as is available, but it really does open some eyes and doors. So I'll add that one in there.
Good suggestion, yeah.
And then French Twist was the other one you mentioned, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and I had a list. Of course, it was from 1997. I had a list in the New Love Without Limits, but I'm sure that all the polyamory sites on the web are full of suggestions for polyamorously themed movies that have come out in the mainstream.
Great one. Well, let's go ahead before. Let's just see what bravery might be popping up on the lines there. And before I ask you all if you've got some questions here live, I just want to say you are welcome to listen. There's no need to ask a question. We just appreciate your, again, giving part of your life and your courage for being on the call, and that's all that's if needed. However, if you've got a question, please know that there's a bunch of other people that are wishing you'll ask it for them. So we really, there's no stupid question or big or small or unimportant or, you know, too witty of a question. So all questions are welcome, and thank you in advance for that. So if you've got a question, I'm going to take us off listen only. So if you've got a question, go ahead and press star 6 if you've got a question, and we'd love to hear from you. And it takes about 1 or 2 seconds for us to hear you. So in case you can't, we're not responding to you, try again, press star 6, and begin asking your question.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Are you hearing me?
We are hearing you. You sound like a woman. I might be wrong, but...
Yes. Yes, I'm going first so to break the ice.
Thank you. What's your question?
Well, I am Serena. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Serena.
Hi. I have a question about... I have a question about science. I think I wrote this question some time ago. I can't remember very well how I formulated it, but in a book.
Serena?
Yes?
Hold on just for a second. So for everyone else on the call, please press star 6 or mute your own phone because we're hearing some background noise and we can't hear Serena. So go ahead and mute yourself out there. We appreciate that. Serena, I'm going to try one more thing. It's pretty noisy. We can't quite hear you. So I'm going to have you just wait 1 second. I'm going to try this one more time.
Okay.
So, Serena, go ahead and press star 6. Let's try that again. We'd love to hear from you, Serena.
Yes. Okay.
There you are. You sound great.
Yes, yes. This is Serena Anderlini Donofrio. I happen to have read some parts of Deborah's book where she talks about polyamory in the 21st century in the context of certain scientific theories that are not quite accepted in the mainstream, including, for example, the Gaia theory, which has interested me a lot, to the point that I've written about it extensively. And so, you know, in view of her comment of her worldview of polyamory that she has had a chance to be around in her travels and in her contacts, I would like for Deborah to talk to us about this wider horizon of polyamory today and how it really intersects with other movements that are trying to create a paradigm shift in the way we relate to the planet, in the way we relate to our fellow human beings and to our fellow other creatures, other species that are with us on this journey on the third planet.
Thank you, Serena. Deborah, please.
Okay. Well, that question just takes me immediately right out over the green hills here into the ocean where I've got whales playing just right offshore, staying at my friend's retreat center here where there's a permaculture retreat going on. Now, permaculture is not something that most people would probably connect with polyamory, although there were a few people catching on to this in the early days, and the permaculture movement, I would say, developed around kind of in parallel to polyamory. And one of the concepts in permaculture, first of all, is sustainability. And sustainability has become a bit of a buzzword, but this was actually the subtitle of my original Love Without Limits book in 1992, Secrets of Sustainable
intimate relationships. Now, as it's turned out, I'm not sure polyamorous relationships in practice are any more sustainable than monogamous ones, but in theory, it's really a way for people to maintain a relationship over a lifetime. Because, you know, really, who's going to be monogamous with one partner only for a whole lifetime, which might be, you know, 50, 60, 70 years of life together? And in permaculture, it's kind of the same idea of, you know, how can we grow food? How can we create landscaping that is sustainable, that continues to grow and develop over time, and that creates an ecosystem that is rich and complex and kind of modeled on the natural systems that existed all over the planet before humans started messing with them and we got into the mess we're in now. But the idea of polyamory as a way to reweave the social fabric that has been breaking down first slowly and now more rapidly as the whole system of tribes and villages and elders and intergenerational families and all has just fallen apart. And we're kind of moving from nuclear families to single-parent families, and it's not healthy. It's not healthy for humans, and it's not healthy for the human ecology in the same way that it's not healthy to have 50 acres all planted with GMO corn. It's much healthier to have an integrated system where plants are sharing space with other plants that support each other, where some things are grown as green manure, as, you know, fertilizer. So I don't want to get too long-winded with this, but sitting in the midst of the permaculture workshop, I'm so aware of, it's so important to make this connection. It's just the words, permaculture. I mean, we're trying to create a new culture here, one that's a little more humane and sustainable and nurturing and loving than what's been going on the planet for a long time, which is taking us to the brink of destruction. And I originally got interested in polyamory and on an idealistic level, and there were some practical personal reasons as well, but on idealistically, what I saw are two things. One, we weren't going to have peace in the world until we have peace between men and women, and we weren't going to have peace between men and women as long as they were trying to control each other's genitals. The other thing I saw is that the family, actually, it's not original to me, but I got family is the building block of the culture. That's where children learn their worldview and their values. And in a dysfunctional nuclear family where it's all about scarcity and control, you're raising children who are all about scarcity and control. You need a new container that is more about sharing and abundance. And my hope has been that polyamory is that container. Now, I have to say, the jury is still out on that. We don't really know. Some of what I see being called polyamory does not seem to be going in that direction, but some of it does. So that's all. I want to have some other wonderful questions to address here, and I could go on for hours on this topic. And in fact, I'm seriously considering here in this lovely spot, which I don't know, where all you are calling from today. I'm sure many people are in California, which I hear has been getting a lot of rain, and I know Serena's in Puerto Rico, which is fairly tropical, and probably have people scattered all over the country and all over the world. But I'm in Hawaii because it's one of my favorite places in the world, and I'm just getting this idea that wouldn't it be really cool, here's this retreat center sitting empty for the next month. What if people just came and scheduled their vacations, and we could hang out, and I can either be quiet and we can watch whales, or you can listen to me sound off about the how polyamory will save the planet. So that's the invitation.
Well, and then we will give everyone who's listening from around the globe some more specifics of how to contact you, of taking that possibility to reality should it be taking hold in their system. So wonderful offer, Deborah. Thank you. And thanks, Serena, for that really really global, kind of wide-reaching question. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Serena, thank you. Go ahead and press star 6 just so we keep our lines clear. And thank you so much for breaking the ice. So let's go ahead to another pre-submitted question. Deborah, so this one is a wonderful one. Do you think it is irresponsible to enter into a relationship with someone who says they want monogamy but states that they still want to be with you even if you're upfront from the start about being not monogamous or not wanting monogamy yourself?
Well, this is such a great question because I know it's come up for a lot of people that I've coached either at the time they got into the relationship or some years later. And it really opens up this whole one of these assumptions I was talking about before of when you choose monogamy, are you choosing for yourself or for your partner? Now, this is a really key question, and I don't assume anything about this question anymore, but a lot of people do, and I suspect the person asking that question is making some assumptions there. But that's the first thing to really to clarify, to drop thinking that you know what it means when your prospective partner says they choose monogamy. Are they choosing it for themselves or for you? This makes a huge difference. And the reality is actually you can only choose for yourself. You can never really choose for your partner. You can tell your partner what you want or what you need or think you need, and they, you know, may agree, and they may be 100% on board with that, or they may not be. But the bottom line is you can only choose for yourself. And so I don't see any problem at all with one person choosing monogamy and the other person choosing non-monogamy as long as, you know, they really understand that this is what they're signing up for. Now, I could see a number of situations in which one person might be completely happy to be monogamous, and it's not that they're sacrificing anything. It's not that they're accommodating to their partner. It's just really what they want, and that's their truth, and they're really loving in a big way, in an unconditional way, which does not demand that just because that's how they feel, that's how their partner should feel. And if that's the case, nothing irresponsible at all. That's totally wonderful. However, if this is a situation, and I've seen plenty of these, where there is some accommodation going on, and, you know, we get our discernment, our judgment often goes out the window when we are infatuated, when we're in this, what people call new relationship energy, when romantic love takes over and, you know, you don't care the ball and chain that's going to come along with this relationship. And, you know, your mind may convince you that, oh, no, I won't be jealous. Oh, I won't suffer about this. Oh, I won't have any problem with it. And the reality is that the underlying hope is he or she will find that I am so wonderful and so fulfilling that even though they think they don't want monogamy, once they have a little taste of me, they're not going to be interested in anyone else. And in fact, sometimes it does happen, but if that's an expectation, then yes, it would be irresponsible to go down that road.
Nice one. Thank you very much for that. That's just beautifully said. Thank you, Deborah. Well, true to our flip-flopping, let's go ahead and take another live question. And again, thank you for popping through the ice that Serena broke before. So if you'd like to ask a question to Deborah, press star 6 on your line, on your keypad, and it'll take about 2 seconds for us to hear you.
Hi, this is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hi. So I'm wondering how you suggest dealing with things like jealousy and, you know, some of those unresolved things from our dysfunctional upbringing and our, you know, dysfunctional families and those things that, you know, sort of can creep in, you know, when trying to have an open relationship or polyamorous relationship.
Well, I'm so glad that you asked that, because anybody who thinks that they're going to have a polyamorous relationship and not have to face jealousy is really fooling themselves. And especially if you've been raised in a culture where you're taught jealousy is inevitable and it's a sign of love, and then all of a sudden you're in this situation where jealousy is an embarrassment. You don't want to admit you have it. You're in trouble. So what I suggest in general terms to people in dealing with their jealousy is, one, to let jealousy be your teacher. That is, don't be afraid to have it show up and to admit that it's there and to, you know, get friendly with it. Learn about it. Invite it in and have tea, and don't be afraid of the boogeyman, because we're very afraid of jealousy. I think partly because, you know, somewhere in our cellular memory, we know that for many hundred years, lots of people have lost their lives as a result of sexual jealousy. And part of the research I did for the new book, Polyamory in the 21st Century, I found out that, you know, as recently as the 1970s, there are places in this country, states in this country and out of this country, where jealousy is actually a defense for murder. And there's a big argument raging in the UK this very year on this topic. This is not, you know, far in the past. So I think this is one of the reasons people are so frightened about jealousy, is that, you know, somewhere in our nervous systems, we know that this could be life or death. But the reality is that for people that are making a conscious choice to practice polyamory, it's probably not life or death. And it's more the fear about jealousy than the jealousy itself sometimes that is gets in the way. So that's the first thing, is to not be afraid to experience jealousy. It's only an emotion. It's not you. It's not your essence. It's not shameful. And it's not necessarily going to make you go out of control, particularly if you recognize it early. As with any intense emotion, this is where people get into trouble. When it's at a relatively low, manageable level, they try to ignore it and push it away until it gets so big that it can't be ignored anymore. And that's the second part of the jealousy management program. Now, one, don't avoid it entirely, but two, don't go for over immersion either. If you have a snake phobia, you don't start out picking up a 10-foot boa constrictor. So you start with, you know, something a few inches long. And so jealousy management is about finding out very specifically what triggers your jealousy, and then negotiating some agreements so that you get to gradually make friends with the jealousy. You're not immediately thrown into a situation that's a 10 on your scale of intensity. You know, start with a 1 or a 2. I think for most couples that open up their relationship, the first time that a partner has a date with somebody else or has sex with somebody else or spends the night with somebody else, these are all milestones that just because they're new and different, the first time or the first few times, yeah, it's likely to be kind of a big deal. And for the majority of people, if it's handled very gently and compassionately and lovingly, it gets easier over time. Now, that's not always the case, but usually it is. And that's what coaches are for.
Now, you want to choose somebody who's not going to tell you that you're crazy to let your partner have sex with somebody else, of course. But, outside support, whether it's a friend or a professional, can be very helpful in getting through those hard moments.
Really nice one, Deborah. And I'll just add one quickly, sort of to underscore what you said, which is if we let jealousy be a teacher, it will show us kind of where we may not be as whole or okay with ourselves. You know, it is an opportunity for growth for ourselves and an opportunity to make the agreements we have with our partner a little bit more loving or caring, right? It can point some really loving fingers toward growth and towards more communication and support.
Well said.
In there. Nice one. Well, great question. Let me ask this other, thank you very much. Was that Carla? Did I get the name right?
It was Kathy. Thank you.
Kathy, I'm sorry. I got the C right, but thank you very much for your question.
You're welcome.
Great. So, Deborah, this, it may be redundant. Let me read the question and see if there's anything else in the question of hard emotions like jealousy, but you may have covered everything. The question is, I love the idea of it being intimate, sexually or not, with others. It feels good and natural. My partner and I are aspiring non-monogamists and have been mostly monogamous for 3 years. I would like help navigating the intense, sometimes ridiculously intense, out-of-control feelings that come up for me when my partner is or would be intimate with others. I know they come up in relation to assumptions and meanings I make up. Nevertheless, they are there. How to deal with these emotions in the moment so I can sleep and go to work the next day, kind of thing. So, again, you may have answered it, and if you can't have, we go straight on. But in case there's anything else to milk out of that question, go for it.
Yeah, I could certainly add probably too many things, but I'll stick to just one or two. And again, being willing to just admit that, you know, I'm not perfect. I have feelings. I have vulnerabilities is so important. And to realize that, yeah, this is an opportunity to learn about yourself and to learn what it is that triggers you, because it's not the same for everybody. And the only way you really find it out is by, self-inquiry of either on your own or with a guide, taking a look at what's underneath these feelings. And so my book, and it's an e-book, so we didn't really talk about this before, but it's called Compersion, Using Jealousy as Path to Unconditional Love. It's kind of like a tarot deck in that it has a number of very short descriptions of what might be under one's jealousy. And some people have used it like a card deck. I always thought it would be fun to make it into a card deck, but I never did that. But you just open it up to a certain page and see what that particular facet of jealousy is about. And then this word compersion is also an incredible tool, because as a psychologist who, somewhat against my will, was trained in behavior therapy, I learned that it's always easier to replace a behavior with another one than to just try to eliminate it. So in this case, it's about replacing the jealousy, the distressing feeling, with compersion, which is the opposite, the flip side. It's feeling joy and happiness that your beloved is loving or being loved by someone else. And you know, it doesn't even occur to people really often that some people just naturally stumble onto it or just find themselves feeling that way without any thought. But for most people, we need the idea that this is even a possibility before we can go there, and then just keep remembering, replace the jealousy with this joy. And you know, telling yourself you feel joyful when you're really feeling miserable and jealous doesn't work. That's not what I'm suggesting. But just realizing that, oh, there could be a whole different experience here. What would that feel like? Trying it on. So I'm ready to move on with those two points. But
nice.
Yeah, the jealousy thing is well worth your time and attention if you want an open relationship. And it is manageable. It is possible to get past it. You know, people often ask me, you know, are you ever jealous? And, you know, yeah, I can have a jealous feeling. And honestly, for me, my intensity level on jealousy was never really high. For some people, it's just off the charts. And those people may not be well suited for polyamory. But most people are able to get to a point where, oh, I have a jealous feeling. Okay, no big deal. Breathe, let go. Breathing is, I think, the best tool for letting go of jealousy. And, you know, get on with your life. It doesn't have to be a major upset.
Deborah, thank you so much for kind of minimizing, normalizing, kind of giving a little love to jealousy. Great one. So let's go ahead and check with you live folks there. Anyone who has a question, press star 6, and it could take about 1 or 2 seconds till we can hear you. But Deborah would love your live question. So go ahead and press star 6 now.
Oh, okay. Hi,
yeah,
Deborah.
Go ahead. We got you.
It's CT.
Hi, CT.
Hi there. I just wanted to ask if you would speak a little bit about the difference between jealousy and envy.
Sure. Yeah, that's an important distinction. Partly because they're often confused. And another confusion that CT didn't ask about, but I'll bring up, is the difference between jealousy and betrayal. So in jealousy, you're afraid that someone is going to take what you've already got. In envy, somebody has something that you want. So it's a different trigger. But the feeling itself can be very similar. In betrayal, what's happened is not just simple jealousy of somebody's going to take what I want, but somebody has lied to me. Somebody has deceived me. Somebody's manipulated me. And this puts a whole extra load on the jealousy thing. Jealousy is hard enough to deal with. It's in its pure form. But when you add in this other experience of really the breaking of trust, it becomes much more difficult. And it may look like, oh, it's going to be a lot easier to not mention that I've got this other lover. I don't want to upset my partner. I know it's no big deal, but he or she doesn't, and it'll just be easier not to mention it. Very good chance that eventually it's going to come to light, and then it's going to be a lot harder than if you'd taken that risk at the front end.
Great one. Thank you,
yes.
CT.
Thank you.
Great question. Great one. Thank you very much. Deborah, this is just something to keep in mind as you answer the last few questions of the evening, which is a really nice request. Could you include some examples and share some of your own experiences while answering questions in the interview? That way, it will help those of us with little or no experience get a better understanding of the message you're trying to convey. So just where it pops up, any example from clients, from your life that makes sense as we go along. So let me go ahead and ask this last one, which is a little bit long-winded, so sit back, everybody, but it's a great question. So a few years ago, we decided to experiment with a polyamorous marriage. I thought it was a prelude to the end, but surprisingly turned out to save our relationship, our marriage. It became an expansion in relationship, not a contraction. It became a unification, not a separation, and isn't love about that too? Unlimited expansion, oneness with all that is. So a marriage is more than just sex, more than friendship, companionship. Hold on, I'm stopping the question here. CT, go ahead and press star 6. I think that's you. All right, hopefully you'll hear us. more than just friendship, companionship, more than just children. It is all of those things, and it is a financial base and infrastructure with a family network that we felt should be acknowledged for all that it truly is. So that was over 3 years ago. Now we have moved back into monogamy, but the potential for an open marriage seems available, but we also seem content to have it just as it is, just us. Much of that, however, I suspect is due to the terrific economic difficulties we've had in this past year. Would you have any insight on how financial challenges can or do play a role in the comfortability of having an open marriage? If times are tough, one doesn't feel responsible to spend money or energy outside of the union, and it seems to make an open marriage not doable. So money and poly, Deborah.
Well, very interesting question, and I'm going to try to be concise because there's so many different directions I could go with this. But I guess where I'm going to start is, I don't know if a man or a woman asked that question, but my guess would be that it's a man. And the reason I'm guessing that is because what I've noticed, both in my own relationships and with clients, is that when men are not feeling financially secure, they're not feeling very sexually expansive. And that seems to be kind of the way that the male psyche is put together. Now, we all have both. So the male part of the woman, as well as the male part of the man, tends to get contracted around financial concerns. And this just seems to be the way it's wired up. I won't say it's, I'm not going to address the nature versus nurture question. Just this seems to be the way it's wired up now. I don't think it has to be that way, though. In fact, one of the possibilities, still largely unexplored in polyamory, is to share not just sexually and not just with the heart, but also with the pocketbook. And some of the early experiments in the utopian communities in the 1800s, Oneida for one, did exactly that. Resources were shared in the community. There was no private property. And that is not something that many people are interested in these days. My ex-husband always said people are much more interested in their checkbooks. And not that he disapproved of that, but that's, just an observation that it doesn't have to be that way, but in some ways, the desire to keep us boundaries around our pocketbooks is even stronger than keeping boundaries around spouses. So that's one thing I want to say. And the other thing I want to say in response to this question comes back to where you asked me to talk about what polyamory meant to me at the very beginning of the conversation. And so I want to point back to that and say that just because two people don't have any other relationships going doesn't mean that they're not polyamorous. They're open to doing that when and if it feels right. And so it's a wonderful place to be, actually, if you're also to things might be different in the future. I don't think there's anything wrong or that needing to be fixed there. That's perfect.
Really nice one. Thank you, Deborah. Well, let's. I actually think we have time for a little bit more. Let's check one more time with those folks live. Press star 6. I think you may be one of the last people to share. So jump on in. Star 6 to ask a question to Deborah. So I think we got somebody who's asking the question. Hello?
Oh, hi. This is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. Go ahead.
Hi. One thing that was coming up for me recently that I'm wondering about is bad timing. My daughter's arriving outside right now. There's about to be a knock at my door, so you have to skip me.
Abort mission? Okay.
Yeah, abort mission.
Sorry, Melissa. Thanks for asking, though. Great.
Okay.
Bye-bye, thanks. Just go ahead and press star 6. And let's go ahead and see if anybody wants to ask besides Melissa. Press star 6 and then just say your name so we know you're there.
You know, I just love that Melissa put her daughter ahead of her question about polyamory. And not that we should always put our children ahead of everything else, but that's really beautiful. I love seeing that. That shows me that this is not a person who's dealing with selfishly wanting more sex, but somebody who's really loving and caring about the important people in her life.
Nice one. Melissa, hope you got that one. So last chance, folks, live. Go ahead and press star 6 if you want to ask your question now to Deborah. Star 6 and then and let us know who you are. Last chance, going once, going twice.
Hi, this is Susan from New York.
Susan, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm well-versed in some of the protocol to do when one of us is going out on a date, you know, spend some time beforehand, come home to each other, spend some time afterward. But now I'm doing a long-distance relationship, and I'm wondering what advice Deborah could give and how we can stay connected long-distance when one of us is going to be going out with someone else.
Well, you know, in my own experience, long-distance relationships are tricky. And they're tricky more because they're long-distance than because they're polyamorous, although often when the two coexist, we tend to think it's the polyamory that's the difficulty. And you know, on one level, I could say, well, you can do the exact same things you would do if you were living together. You can talk on the phone or beforehand and afterwards, and, you know, you can have agreements about that you're going to hold each other in your heart. That's one approach. The other approach is to really see if you can take this as an opportunity to let go of the effort to stay connected. Because the reality is that if you and this other person are connected at a really deep level, there's probably nothing you can do to change that, even if you wanted to. Having sex with someone else is not going to lessen the connection if it's a really strong one. In fact, it may make it stronger to realize that your connection can include other people. And, you know, all the energy, and I'm as prone to this as anyone else is, but all the energy that goes into trying to keep a connection and concern about keeping a connection, when the truth is, if you look at this, and you probably see immediately how true it is, it's much more difficult to get disconnected than it is to stay connected.
Thank you.
Nice one. Thank you for that beautiful last question.
Yeah, good one.
All right, guys. So I want to just leave some time now. Thank you for all your good questions, asked and unasked. And thank you, Deborah, for just the amount of time that you spent in your lifetime living this and researching this and working with people on it. It really shows in your answers. Thank you so much for your generosity. And,
you're welcome.
Oh, good, good. And I want to make sure that folks know how to get more of you. So I know that obviously your specialty is poly issues, but that you really also work with other kinds of relationships, sexuality, and life change issues. So I want you to take it away for a moment. Please let people know how they can have more of you, what's upcoming, and how they can connect with you.
Okay, I'd love to. So I'm totally available to to do phone coaching sessions with people. And if you need a visual, we can do this on Skype with a webcam or just over the phone. And I've worked with people all over the world and can often help get you unstuck or avoid a lengthy, miserable experience with just 1 or 2 hours of clarifying what's up and how to create what you want in relationship. And the possibility that I mentioned before, which just kind of occurred to me as I was sitting here looking out at the water, that if people are interested in coming and doing a private retreat, either a single or a couple or a larger group, you can email me at Taj@lovewithoutlimits.com, and that would be the same if you're interested in a phone session, Taj, Taj@lovewithoutlimits.com, or phone me at 415-507-1739. That is a Bay Area phone number, but it's a cell phone. I'm in Hawaii. So, after 8 a.m. is my time, works for me. And you can also visit my website, www.lovewithoutlimits.com. And that will give you links to a lot of articles that I've written and my monthly blog, an opportunity to get on my monthly letter that I email out. And one other thing is I do actually have a week-long retreat scheduled in Bermuda for those of you on the East Coast who don't want to make the long trek to Hawaii. I'm offering a week at a luxury, incredible hotel right on the beach, on the water in Bermuda, and it's called Health and Wellness in the Bedroom. So it's for couples. My dear friends Armand and Angelina, who create their own original music having to do with New Paradigm Love, are going to be joining me there to provide both some entertainment and some humor and just their beautiful, wonderful selves. So those are some ways to get some more of me, and I am so honored to have, I didn't realize I was kicking off this whole series, so honored to have been asked, and hope that you really create a new wave of wonderful information for people that are pioneering new love styles, because it's so important. I think that's the main work we have to do on the planet right now, is really get our relationships clear.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, before you all go, let me just repeat back some of the information Deborah said, just in case you had a technical blip or whatever. So for phone coaching, for a spontaneous retreat or her Bermuda retreat, or just to learn more about perhaps the Compersion ebook Deborah spoke about or blogs and articles on her website, the main place you'd want to go is her website, lovewithoutlimits.com. And then she generously gave her email as well, Taj@lovewithoutlimits.com, and phone 415-507-1739. So please be in touch with Deborah to get some of her goodies. And what I'd love to do as a way of wrapping us up for someone out there live who didn't quite get a chance to ask a question but still has a burning desire to pipe up here, just one thing that you got out of tonight's interview, or something you'd like to acknowledge Deborah for. So anyone out there who'd like to end us off on a beautiful appreciation acknowledgement note for Deborah, press *6, and we'd love to hear from you. One thing you got out of the call, the interview, the teleclass, or something that you want to appreciate Deborah for.
This is Serena, if I may, but I don't want to take priority over anyone else.
Serena, go for it. We love
Okay, I wanted to express my appreciation for all of Deborah's work, which has inspired mine in more than one way, and for her support recently on several occasions, and for the wonderful conversations that we've had. And in particular, in relation to this call, I wanted to acknowledge you, Deborah, for the last response that you gave me. It made me, that you gave whoever was the questioner, about the connection. I also feel that when there is a deep connection with somebody, fighting it is just a waste of time. You just have to, you know, to acknowledge it. It's there. And I was wondering if, to me, that registers as astral connection. I've had astral connections with people that persisted years after the relationship ended. So just wanted to put that in as a concept, the astral connections. Do you feel that also?
Serena, you're cheating. It's just, unfortunately, you've left us with a teaser. So next time we all get together, we'll talk about the point that you've left us with. But in the meantime, thank you so much for your appreciation of Deborah, all that she's done for you, and even wanting more from tonight. So thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful. And Deborah, real quick, I just want to say a deep appreciation for absolutely kicking off this series for people to really understand what is open relationship and polyamory from masterful sources of which you are so primary. So thank you for your love and your wisdom and your experience and your expertise tonight. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
All right, everybody. With that, we'll go ahead and say goodnight. I'm going to take you all off of mute. If you want to just say your appreciations for Deborah as we all say goodnight, go ahead. And then for everyone else, thank you so much. Good night, everybody. Bye, everybody. Good night.